Sandy Clough on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
And on this National Donut Day, a second day of June 2017, Sandy Clough with you on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, your home for the best coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Jeff, you got in a little bit late today. Have you sampled at least one of the donuts at this point?
I have not yet.
Everybody, they may be gone because Lammy and Columbus were making a beeline for our main sports office here. And I know Columbus comes through. Tell me a little story about Tyler Columbus, who is candid sometimes to a fault, I think. He comes in, and he's got one of the donuts that was delivered today. And he's got one of the ones, and I don't know if you've even seen, Jeff, the donuts, but he's got one with the strawberries and all kinds of other things. And he's munching on the donut during one of the breaks, and he's coming back into the studio. And he turns and he says to Ben, and I'm sitting there as well, says, you know, sometimes with donuts, less is more. As he's eating the donut with strawberries and all kinds of other elements on it. You know, it's a cream donut, but they got the sprinkles, they got the strawberries, they got everything you could possibly think of, and some things you would never think of putting on top of a donut. And he's munching away while saying less is more. And I happen, in theory, to agree with him on that.
I think he's right on, too.
But
yeah.
I think he is, but you got to go back there and look at the assortment of donuts that have been delivered here today on National Donut Day. And it gets our morning off to a very good start. We've got the good doctor in the house here coming in about 10 minutes or so, Dr. Rick Perea, who is a man whose activities cannot be accurately encapsulated, I don't think, in terms of the volume of things that he's got going on right now. We'll hear from Dr. Perea in just a few moments. This is an off day, and I'm pretty much around the NFL as far as OTAs are concerned. And most of the teams are gathering next week for the final phase of OTAs, and then basically the week after that, you get into the mandatory mini camps. All of these OTAs, we keep saying this with some sarcasm, that they're voluntary. But if you don't show up, you're in bad shape. And we've been talking about a lot of elements on the Broncos, and whether they be in terms of reuniting a locker room, we got into that yesterday, whether the locker room remains divided and some way, shape, or form. Arnie Stapleton came on. Arnie's got as good a read of the Broncos as anybody from Associated Press. He's out there all the time. I'd say Arnie and Jeff Legwald are probably the two guys, certainly on the print side, who are out there with the best attendance record, let me put it that way. You know, they keep records of attendance on when you show up during the off season, during so-called voluntary periods. And I would say for these two guys, Jeff Legwald of ESPN and Arnie Stapleton of Associated Press, they're number one, at least on the print side, when it comes to attendance out there. And Arnie said, you know, yeah, there are still some divisions. And the perception, and this may or may not be the coach's perception at this point, that Trevor Siemian remains ahead of Paxton Lynch. But I thought today we'd turn to the idea of the running game and get to your thoughts, and we'll express some of ours, on which players, either those coming back or those added during the offseason, will prove to be most important as either recovering players coming back, and I guess I'm talking about C.J. Anderson most especially among the running backs, and with all that's going on with the offensive line, is there one person or even two people who stand out? And I'll give you my two here in just a second. Will they be better on the ground this season? And that ties in with our talk about the offensive line and our supposition that it couldn't possibly be much worse in 2017 or worse at all than it was in 2016. I will stipulate that they will be better on the ground this season, yes. What will Jamaal Charles provide? I don't think anybody really knows. And Cecil gave a great answer to that question yesterday on the program, and he said it really runs the gamut. He might not make the team, or he could lead the team in rushing. And again, that might not take a whole lot to lead the team in rushing, but it might not take a whole lot for Charles to be squeezed out. There'll be a lot of running backs in camp. Will one stand out? Charles is probably not going to get a lot of work in the preseason, at least on the practice field. I think Charles' value comes perhaps as much in terms of what he can do as a receiver than as a ball carrier. But we're talking about the running game here, so I want to keep the discussion focused on that during the course of the morning. And we'll bring Dr. Puri on here in a few moments. We'll talk some baseball with Patrick Saunders in a little more than an hour from the Denver Post. And Cecil Ammie, our fan Broncos insider, of course, at 11:45. How important is it that C.J. Anderson stay healthy this year? I think for the team and for C.J. himself, it's critically important. What does Mike McCoy provide? We talked about Mike McCoy and what he's going to do with the passing game. What about the running game? What about the running game? And the Broncos, during McCoy's 4 years here as offensive coordinator, had in 2011, with Tebow a quarterback, perhaps proving at times more effective as a runner than he was as a passer, they had an excellent running game, one of the best in the league. The other years, very much up and down, 2009, 2010, 2012, although 2012 was a pretty good year. I thought the Broncos' offensive balance in 2012 may have been better than it was in any of the other Peyton Manning years here in Denver, just in terms of balance. In other words, you take that offensive line performance. I think you take the performance of the running backs that year, including Moreno, and even Hillman in the playoff game. People forget what a good game Ronnie Hillman had in that playoff game against Baltimore when so many things went wrong that day. That was one thing that didn't go wrong. And the Broncos ran the ball reasonably well back in 2012. We'll get to the Rockies as well, taking the final game of that four-game series, as described by Nick Groh, kind of a quirky series in that it was home and home. Rockies lost 3 out of 4 but took the game yesterday and remain, for this season, a team that has not lost more than 3 games in succession and a team that has not lost, as we speak on June 2nd, a full-fledged road series all year long. And they are back at least in a first-place tie, if not sole possession of first place, with Arizona in the National League West. Again, more baseball talk in an hour. Coming next, we'll talk about all subjects related to the psychological side of the game with Dr. Rick Perea. That's coming next, while we remind you to check out our podcast presented by Coors Light at 1043thefan.com.
It's Radio 1043 The Fan presents The Great Sandy Clough.
Pleased as always to be joined in studio by Dr. Rick Perea, organization and performance psychologist. It's DK2 Motivation and Performance. We'll talk more about that in just a few moments. We were talking before we came on the air here once again about how you went through coming off a year with the Broncos in 2015, which was a championship season, a year with the Miami Dolphins last year. Adam Gase was a first-year coach.
Yes,
so the procedure last year that Miami went through, perhaps somewhat analogous to what the Broncos are experiencing this year, with Vance Joseph having been on Adam's staff a year ago and now taking over the reins as head coach of the Broncos. Do you have any idea? You're a good one to ask in terms of comparison. The challenge for Adam Gase in Miami last year versus the challenge of Vance Joseph this year. I think Vance is taking over a better team, but I'm not sure the psychological repair work isn't as challenging for Vance this year as it was for Adam last year in Miami.
Yeah, absolutely, Sandy. First of all, I just want to say thanks for having me on again. Great to see you. Great to be here. When any first-year coach takes over a team, they really have to attack it from two levels, and that's the climate of the organization and the culture of the organization. People talk about culture all the time, but you gotta establish a climate before you establish a culture. Climate is right now. When you walk into that squad meeting room, when the whole team is there, and the head coach, first-year head coach, first time in front of the team, that's the climate right there, what's going on that moment. The culture will be established over time.
Yeah.
But any first-year coach is going to want to change the climate immediately because obviously they're in there to make change happen. They're change agents, if you will. So what happens with a first-year head coach is they have to understand, okay, I've inherited this team. I've inherited players that I didn't draft. I've inherited teams that I didn't select through free agency.
Right.
I inherited players that I didn't sign. So I have inherited a team that I didn't select. Okay, you can't cry over spilled milk. What you have to do is establish a climate and a culture, and that starts with your coaches. And the coaches all have to be on the same page in terms of what they want to establish. Scheme, strategy, but most importantly, Sandy, is the psychology of the way they approach things. Is it a deficit-based environment and culture, or is it an asset-based? Asset-based, you focus on what people do well. Deficit-based means people focus on what people don't do well. And it's very different when you see around those climate and cultures. And I can attest to you, being around teams, for example, last year with the Miami Dolphins, that AG, Adam Gase, he's a guy that believes in the asset aspect of coaching. Now, I'm not going to give away any of the secrets here because he's really one of the what I feel is like the up-and-coming young guys in the league. But Vance, knowing him from last year, being with us in Miami, he's a guy that can really establish a healthy climate and culture. But it's going to take getting into training camp.
Yeah, it can't happen now.
No,
you don't think much?
No, not as much. It will in individual team meetings. It will happen with position meetings and then offense and defense. You know, I keep hearing this about this little rift between the offense and defense.
Yeah.
And going back a couple years when I was with the Broncos, there was a little bit of that anyway. And there's a little bit of that on any team, just depending on how deep you want to dig. But I'll tell you this. Teams that are going to perform at the highest levels, first-year coaches need to understand there's two levels of cohesion they're trying to get to. Task and social. Task cohesion means everyone does their job. And then social cohesion is that love, that appreciation that everybody plays for each other, with each other. I've always said love wins. And when you can establish that social cohesion on a team, you got a chance to do special things. And having known VJ Vance Joseph this past year, he is a guy that can really establish a climate and culture of asset-based, what people do well, and thus establish that task and social cohesion.
On offense and defense here, there does seem to be, whether there is a split or not and how serious it is, impossible to say exactly, but there does seem to be an obvious difference in that the offense has to catch up to the defense, and the offense is learning an entirely new system.
Yes.
Even with the change from Wade Phillips to Joe Woods, the defense, in terms of personnel and scheme, figures to remain largely the same. I think 9 out of the 11 starters are pretty much absolutely locked in. Maybe you have a little question at nose tackle, although I think Pecco's going to play there. And maybe at the defensive end spot opposite Derek Wolf, there will be some competition and maybe some uncertainty as to who best fits that role as a starter. On offense, you've got a host of changes, and an offense that is learning more now than playing right now. So yes. When you see the offense and defense on the field together, there's obviously a difference in terms of efficiency and performance. How does Vance Joseph bridge that gap from your point of view? Give the offense, at least in an attitudinal sense, some of the same qualities that the defense has had for at least the last 2 years.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Sandy. Attitudinal. That's what needs to be changed on the offensive end. When you look back in 2015 when we won the Super Bowl and I was there, our defense had a mindset, a streak of nastiness to them. We just went after people. We didn't hesitate. We went after people. And Wade kind of set that tone with his play calling, very aggressive, attacked offenses. But on offense, if you walked into that locker room at Dove Valley, the offense was so quiet. They're on their end of the locker room, quiet, looking at their phones, not really even conversing with each other. You go over to the defensive end, and it's a party.
Yeah.
They're playing music. They're dancing. They're having a good time.
It's loud.
And so when we talk about social cohesion, the defense has had that for the last several years. Now, I would caution you, you're missing one key member this year, and that's DeMarcus Ware. Now, I'm not talking about DeMarcus physically on the field because he was starting to decline. Let's be honest. What I'm talking about is his leadership abilities, his abilities to communicate and connect with defensive players and encourage that connectedness. I want to see the offense have that kind of attitudinal adjustment as well. And I think they addressed it in the draft, Sandy. I think the kid out of Utah, the left tackle, I think he's going to be add an element of nasty streak and an attitude that's, hey, let's go. Let's go and let's attack defenses. Let's not wait for them and be strictly strategically based. Let's go after defenses. Let's have an attitude. You know, one of the things I love about Mike Pouncey, the starting center for the Miami Dolphins, is Mike has a defensive mentality playing offense. He goes after people. He's aggressive. He's assertive. Yeah. And that really helps the whole offensive line become contagious around that kind of attitudinal adjustment. So I think the Broncos have already addressed it somewhat in the draft, and I think Vance Joseph will address it in the climate and culture of training camp by establishing a lot of one-on-one, what we call Viking drill, where the offense goes against the defense, where it's competitive and people go after each other, and that offense starts to take on the mindset that the defense has had for the last few years.
You have a couple of areas that we want to get into today in terms of mindfulness and emotional intelligence, some protocols and some ideas on that that we can tie in to some of the subjects we've been discussing. We'll do that next with Dr. Rick Perea in studio. Sandy Clef with you on Denver Sports Station, your home for the best coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Great Sandy Clef on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Dr. Rick Perea in studio as we continue. Sandy Clef on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, your home for the best coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. You're reading and hearing, as we all are, about Will Parks, first on Snapchat and then facing misdemeanor charges of harassment and family offense, domestic violence because of an incident that took place, an alleged incident, with his former girlfriend back in late March. I assume that the Broncos, at least in terms of the Snapchat incident, are handling this perhaps not for public consumption, but they're handling this in some form or fashion. What is the responsibility of a head coach, especially a new one, in a situation like this where you have both an on-field or on-the-practice-field incident and then dealing with what may or may not have happened in late March involving Will Parks?
Yeah, well, in terms of the domestic issue, that really is a legal issue that will be handled outside of Dove Valley. But in terms of leadership, a head coach always wants to exhibit a really charismatic and defined leadership style where he's able to communicate with his players, Sandy. And I know some head coaches in the league that would take a very active role. They'd call those players into their office. They tell them that these are our team rules. These are the rules of your position and your position coach. And you have violated them. And because you have violated them, this will be your consequence. And it's swift, it's quick, and it's to the point. You do not want to let things like this linger. Because if it gets around the I was going to say the clubhouse, but the locker room, if it gets around the locker room that, you know what, head coach really doesn't take a leadership role, doesn't communicate with us when it comes to discipline or structure, then that can really establish a climate and a culture that's not structured and disciplined. I anticipate VJ will handle this, or probably already has handled this, swiftly, very directly, with structure and discipline.
We were talking a little bit earlier as we started the program and during the break just a few moments ago about the running game here in Denver. But I want to ask you about both the psychology and the physical aspects. Now, we know that the era of the 20-carry-a-game running back has basically passed. There's one guy who sort of did that last year, and that was Ezekiel Elliott down in Dallas. Nobody else came particularly close to averaging 20 carries a game or 300 carries over a season, save for Blunt in New England, who had 299 carries, I think it was. You had a terrific back last year in Ajayi, but talk about, if you would, whether you're 190 pounds or 230 pounds as a running back, not only the psychological toll, but the physical toll that takes. Running backs still occasionally go for 200 yards. Didn't Ajayi have a couple of games like
yes,
that last
absolutely.
Year?
Absolutely, he did.
And you think, boy, after a game like that, psychologically you'll be feeling great. If you got 200 yards, maybe the thinking goes you weren't getting hit that much. It's after those games, though, no matter how many carries it required to get you the 200 yards, the physical toll is astonishing.
Yeah. I think the average fan does not realize the impact of the physicality of the running back position.
Yeah.
You are taking hits from so many different angles. You know, when you take a hit from a defensive lineman, it's usually just the physics, the math, the how much they weigh, how big the girth they are. But when you take a hit from a linebacker that has a 4 or 5 yard acceleration zone before they hit you, that's a huge impact. You got a 230-pound running back, a 240-pound linebacker. The physics tells you that that's going to be a collision, not even an impact. And then not to mention safeties that are coming up at full speed, some of them weighing 215, 220.
Right.
A physical, I mean, even backs like Ajayi, who's 230, they take a punishment, a physical punishment. But they also take a psychological punishment because they realize that, you know what, even though I'm getting 4 yards a crack, even 5, sometimes 7, 8, you're still going to get hit and you're still going to suffer a lot of physiological woes. But here's the thing, Sandy, that a lot of people don't realize. When you're on the football field in the war, if you will, the mind goes before the body. It really does. And, you know, the body will compete. The body will do almost anything we ask of it. It's the mind we have to convince to go past beyond those barriers. And so the era of the 25 carry back really is gone. And partly it's because of the mental aspect that there's not enough guys that have been prepared mentally to tote that rock 25 times and be prepared not only for the physiological impact, but the psychological impact that that has on them during the week, during recovery.
We know that Jamaal Charles, for example, has had serious knee injuries in recent years, but you look at the number of carries he had in some of his best seasons, 230 carries in 2010, 1467 was the yard count. 285 carries for 1,509 yards in 2012, 259 carries for 1,287 in 2013, 206 for 1,033 as recently as 3 years ago in 2014, but only 8 games played in the last 2 years and only 83 carries. We were talking earlier, this will be his 10th year in the league. Is there any way that, in terms of the running game, you can count on Jamaal Charles, even carrying the ball 100, 125 sure. times this year?
I'm going to sound incredibly biased when I answer this question. If he has a great mental coach, and let me tell you why. Because our thoughts in everyday life, our thoughts usually shape us. I tell my clients, I tell my players, shape your thoughts so you don't allow your thoughts to shape you. If Jamaal Charles allows his thoughts to shape him, he won't last. He'll say, I'm a 10-year back. I've had a lot of wear and tear on the body. That's going to shape how he plays the game. But if he learns to shape his own thoughts every morning when he gets up, 3 to 5 minutes doing protocols and practices that we have in the industry to get your thoughts in a positive spot, he has a chance. And my assumption is that the Elway is banking on that. We can get him right from the mind, and if you get the right mind right, the body will follow. So I would say and this is funny, Sandy, because not many people think about that. They'll think about running backs, the longevity, their performance, yeah, based on physiological.
Yeah.
But they don't talk about the mental, the psychological aspect, where they're going to be. But I repeat this. If we learn to shape our thoughts instead of our thoughts shaping us, we have a chance not only in the professional football world, but as a business executive, as a mom or a dad, to do anything we want to do in our life. And that's the key for Jamaal Charles to shape his own thoughts.
You've talked about mindfulness and thoughts a lot. You have any number of what you call mindfulness protocols.
Yes.
That I think apply not just to football, but to all areas of life.
Right.
Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So mindfulness is a psychological protocol that we use. And it really talks about being mindful of what you're doing and what you're thinking. Remember, everything starts with our thoughts. Our thoughts lead to feelings. Feelings lead to mood. Mood leads to behavior. Behavior is your performance at work, your behavior on the field. So one of the things we talk about is that thoughts are not facts. So we can have a fleeting thought. It can be positive, negative, eerie. It can be really strange. You know, a lot of people will say to me, Doc, why do I have such weird dreams? And I say, okay, well, that's the subconscious. There's something going on that you're thinking about maybe during the day. But thoughts are not facts. And I want people to understand that. Just because you have a negative thought doesn't mean you're a negative person or that you will have a negative day. You can learn to shape your thoughts every morning through our practices and protocols. So thoughts are not facts. Now, here's the second thing I want you to understand. Accepting uncomfortable thoughts. Now, what does that mean? Accepting uncomfortable thoughts. So when you think about when you get frustrated in life, when you get hurt in life, it's because you are fighting that thought.
Yeah.
You're not accepting it. When you learn to accept uncomfortable thoughts and hence move on, you will not have as much frustration in your life. You will have not as much what we call cognitive dissonance. Cognitive means thinking. Dissonance means imbalance. You will not have that, very much of that. So when people say to me, Sandy, my life is stressful. My job is stressful. My marriage is stressful. I say, no, it's not. It's your thoughts about your marriage that make it feel stressful. So if you reframe your thoughts, you have a chance for a new day, a new dawn, to reach higher levels of performance than you ever thought possible. So mindfulness, just to repeat, is thoughts are not facts and accepting uncomfortable thoughts.
And we'll get into some other areas with the good doctor here in just a few moments. Get his thoughts on the Rockies. I know you're not spending as much time this year with the Rockies as you did a year ago, but Dr. Perea has, I think, some thoughts about how the Rockies are faring this year and how on earth is a team that used to dread every long road trip as recently as a year ago, 19-9, and on June 2nd, the Rockies this year have so far not lost a single full-fledged road series. Hope we're not jinxing them this weekend in San Diego, but that is a fact at the present time. As we continue on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Always a pleasure to have here in studio Dr. Rick Perea of DK2. Motivation and performance. Talk about that a little bit.
We have an office off I-25 and Arapaho Road where we take the whole body into consideration, Sandy, not only the mind, but the body. We train the mind through neurofeedback. Neurofeedback is helping the brain align itself with the 5 major brain waves. We also help with coaching and counseling. We have float tanks where people float in saltwater tanks. We have biomats. We have alpha stim, which stimulates the alpha brain waves. So we treat the whole body because, you know, if you treat the brain without the body, it's not holistic, the body without the brain. And, you know, you can look us up. We're DK2 Motivation Performance. We have 6 different counselors there that do great job. And I'll tell you what, we're really helping forward the industry because other psychologists are coming into our office and saying, wow, and they're getting ideas from us. And that's great, Sandy. I want the industry to be able to reach people, not just performers in the professional athletic world, but everyday people as well.
I don't know if you watched the NBA finals last night, but there was a spot with Steph Curry.
Floating.
That I was thinking of you.
Yeah,
Steph
absolutely.
Curry floating.
There you go.
Doing a lot of this. Emotional intelligence, speaking of Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors, I was looking down the list at the factors you mentioned in association with emotional intelligence, and I was thinking about Golden State a lot.
Sure.
So I read through that list. Talk about that a little bit.
So emotional intelligence is exactly what it says, is we're very aware of our emotions. You know, a lot of people get upset during competition, get emotional during competition, and that takes them into what we call, Sandy, the sympathetic side of the nervous system, which means increased heart rate, increased respiration, muscle tension, and narrowing of thinking. We don't want muscle tension and narrow of thinking. For a pro baseball player, for a pro football quarterback, or even a mom at home taking care of three crazy boys, okay? So we want to operate on the parasympathetic side. So we've got to be very emotionally intelligent. And when we're aware of our emotions, we have a chance to regulate them through diaphragmatic breathing, yep, through positive self-talk. But in most people, when there is a performance failure, okay, when they do not reach their goals in terms of physiological performance, they go back and look at the physiological elements, and they forget to look at the emotional side. How much did emotions play a role in my failure? You know, in working with Major League Baseball pitchers, I can tell you this, yep, Sandy, that most of their performance failure is not physical. It's not physiological. It's emotional. It's the inability. They get upset. They don't locate their pitches, so they get frustrated. Now the central nervous system is on that sympathetic side with muscle tension and narrowing of thinking, instead of being on the parasympathetic side where there's very little muscle tension and clarity of thinking. So what we do is we go in and help him understand how much emotional intelligence influences performance. Pitching coaches around the league are astonished when I can sit there and say, the reason he's dropping his elbow around delivery is because he's on the wrong side of the nervous system. And if we just get him to train himself through diaphragmatic breathing and our other techniques to get on the parasympathetic side, he's going to throw with much freer motion. He's going to locate his spots.
Right.
So I say this, it has everything to do with psychology when there's physiological underperformance or failure.
And you see that with the Rockies this year, especially among these three rookie pitchers, and obviously Greg Holland, who came back from an injury that historically you don't come back from.
Right.
At the stage of Holland's career, particularly.
Sure.
You just don't come back from that. And he seems, in a lot of ways, although he doesn't throw as hard, even better. He's using other pitches now.
Yeah.
He looks so commanding out there right now.
Emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
You know, he's using the neck up, his yeah, ally. You know, remember Greg Maddux?
Yep.
Greg Maddux was a guy that wasn't physically imposing. He wasn't throwing 99 miles an hour, but he was very emotionally intelligent, able to regulate his emotions, able to recognize when emotions start to become a factor, be able to regulate them, frame them, and reframe so you're on that other side of the nervous system. Because I'll tell you what, if you let emotions play a role in decision-making, in performance every day, you will be up and down. We call that neuroticism. You will be up and down in the way you think and in your moods. And Sandy, quite honestly, that's exhausting. People get physiologically exhausted, and depression can set in when they have high moods of neuroticism. And the reason is because they're not learning to understand their emotional intelligence. And we teach people just from some simple protocols how to get their minds in the right spot for success and just be aware of emotional intelligence, and it will help their performance every day in their job, in their relationships, and with their families.
And we were talking about Golden State a moment ago, but you see it with Durant. You certainly saw it last night. He's a different guy, and you can argue that now that he's away from Westbrook, you know, his emotions, his psychology has changed. We already know what a talent he is.
Yeah. Well, and I know what they're doing out there psychologically, and that's a different factor than what they're doing in Oklahoma. So that's a piece of it. You know, if you let's look at the other side. Let's look at JR. You know, JR, I remember Chauncey Billups once said that JR is the most physically gifted basketball player he's ever been around.
Yeah.
Okay. But what's the difference? Why doesn't he bring that every night? It's from the neck up. He's not, you know, and again, with all due respect, JR, he's not as emotionally intelligent as he could be. He needs to be aware of where he's putting that energy, how it's affecting his performance, because from the neck down, he's one of the best in the league.
Absolutely. Why are the Rockies 34-22 right now, including 19-9 on the road? Is it physical or psychologically based? And you touched on the pitching a moment ago.
Right.
But, you know, the hitting hasn't always been explosive this year, but it's certainly been timely.
Sure.
And everybody seems to be pulling their own weight. And I know you're particularly close to Carlos Gonzalez. He had a game yesterday where he only had one hit.
Yep.
But he walked three times and he scored a couple of runs.
Yeah.
And he was in the middle of everything.
Sure.
In a game that the Rockies really kind of had to have because they had lost the previous three in a row.
Yeah.
To what at the beginning of the series was a last place ball club.
Yeah. Let me answer your first question first. So there's a linear model we use in performance psychology. And it's in these linear stages, form, storm, norm, and perform. The Rockies are in the performance stage right now. Performance is really the last quadrant of where we want to be. In a Major League Baseball season, you want to hit that performance stage at about late August into September when you're heading into the playoffs. That's when you really want to hit that. They're hitting it now. Now, I'm not saying they can't maintain it, but it's highly unlikely. I like teams to go through it. In the form is obviously a training camp.
Yeah.
And in spring training.
Spring training, yeah.
Storm is when you kind of figure out who's going to be your guys, who's going to play first, who are going to rotate in the outfield, those type of things. Norm is when you start finding your groove, and then perform is when you're at peak level. I would say this. The Rockies just have to be really cognizant and aware that they don't reach the performance level too quick, too soon. Mm. It's okay to stay in the storming phase because it's how you finish the season, Sandy. The record doesn't matter in June and July. It's how that you finish the season, and that's the key. Unfortunately, in Major League Baseball, because I work with several teams, it's unfortunate there are teams that do not understand that linear model. And it's hopefully in the years to come, we'll have practitioners that can help them understand because it's so powerful in helping you reach performance at the right time.
Is it your sense that Black and Breidich understand this?
Yeah, I know Breidich does. Absolutely. I know he does.
You don't know Black as well.
No, I don't know Black as well. I would guess that he probably does not because that's pretty consistent in the major leagues. You have to be educated. You know, one of the things I love about switching sports, Nick Saban, is he's the first one to raise his hand and say, teach me that. Teach me that. I'm a football coach. I know scheme. I know strategy. I don't know linear models.
Yeah.
There's too many coaches, too many managers out there, Sandy, that don't ask for help.
Just before we let you go, we're looking up on our monitor, and you know the Tiger Woods story has been all over the place this week. From afar, is there anything that would offer us insight as to where he is? And again, much of the talk about Tiger over the last few years has been about his physical ailments.
Right.
Now the talk shifts to what is going on.
Yeah.
Inside Tiger Woods.
Right. And I think it all stems back to his divorce, his family being split up. You know, Tiger's a very family-oriented
person. His father passing away.
Even his father passing away. That was really hard on him. I know that for a fact. Now, again, I'm not going to put myself out there that I know this and I know that. Right. But I can tell you this. He has not gotten help from the right people as of yet from the neck up.
Right.
I can tell you that.
Right.
Because it needs to be emphasized from a more of a person-oriented instead of sport-oriented.
Right. It's not a swing coach that he needs.
It's not a swing coach. It's not how to regulate yourself on the course. It's off the course. It's self-concept, helping getting yourself in the right spot as a person. We always say this, Sandy, if the man's right, the player's right. You know, Tiger, the man's not right now. And if we can get the man right, then he'll have a chance to at least come back and play very respectable golf throughout his career. But we got to get the man right. And once we get the man right, and I shouldn't be sexist, get the person right.
Yeah.
Get the person right, the player's right. That's through mental protocols, emotional intelligence, mindfulness, all these techniques that teach people how to be great as a person first. Because I can tell you this, the best athletes in the world, the best performers in the world, they're great people at a core level.
And trite as this may sound, we appreciate what you offer. And you're that kind of person as well. I know personally for me, and I think for our listeners, every time you come on, it's a great listening experience, and we appreciate your time. We know how busy you are. The busiest man in show business, whether psychology can be termed show business or not, DK2, Motivation and Performance, Dr. Rick Perea, Organization and Performance Psychologist. We've been doing this, hard to believe, for about 4.5 years now.
Yes. Yes.
And we hope to continue doing it.
I'd love it.
In the days and months ahead.
And I'll tell you this, Sandy. Thank you for those kind words, and I'll put it right back at you. You know what? One thing I want to tell the listeners, today, go out and sprinkle love and sugar in your life. I mean, love people. Yep. Tell them you love them. Sprinkle sugar. There's always the vinegar that's going to be around. Make a concerted effort to do that, because love wins. It does. It wins in families. It wins in organizations. It wins in teams. And sprinkle that sugar. And I'll just say this from me to you, Sandy. I love you. I care about you. I trust you. And I love being around you.
Same as far as I'm concerned. Absolutely the same. I appreciate it. Rick Perea in studio. Patrick Saunders from the Denver Post, our Rockies insider. More baseball talk at 11:15. We'll talk some NBA finals. It's amazing. Cleveland lost 2 games last year at the start of the series by huge margins. But the loss last night seemed a little different. It's certainly being interpreted that way. Cecil Lammy, our fan, Broncos insider at 11:45 as well. That's all ahead on your home for the best coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.